What if the next global arms race isn't fought with nuclear warheads or stealth bombers, but with the very building blocks of life itself?
It's a terrifying thought. You know, as a screenwriter, I've spent years imagining futures like that, worlds where humanity's greatest scientific leaps become its most dangerous weapons. I've written scenes about it, characters who grapple with it.
And that's the thing, isn't it? It's not just fiction anymore.
Not at all. And that's what has me so completely captivated by this topic. The line between the stories we tell and the reality we're creating is, well, it's vanishing. Fast.
Yeah. For me, it's coming from the other side. Through my work with podcasters, I've spoken to so many brilliant scientists and ethicists. They talk about gene editing technologies like CRISPR with this incredible sense of awe and hope for curing diseases.
Of course, the medical potential is staggering.
It is. But in every one of those conversations, there's this unspoken fear in the room, this shadow of what else this technology could be used for. That's what I can't shake.
And that shadow is exactly where we're headed today. We're talking about the genetic gambit, unraveling the role of genetic engineering in the future of warfare.
We are going to explore the science, the strategy, and the profound ethical dilemmas of a battlefield that's moving from the physical world into our very DNA.
Think about it. Soldiers engineered to be stronger, faster, maybe even to feel no pain. Or, even more frighteningly, bioweapons designed to target specific genetic markers in a population.
It's uncharted territory. And the big question we're going to keep coming back to is, just because we can do this, does it mean we should?
And what happens when one nation decides the answer is yes? Stay with us. This is a conversation you won't want to miss.
That question is... Well, it's the entire game, isn't it? Because the moment one country, one clandestine agency, decides that yes is the only answer to stay ahead, the conversation is over. It's no longer a debate. It becomes a race.
A race to the bottom, maybe? I mean, my mind immediately goes to the soldiers themselves. We talk about them like they're pieces of hardware to be upgraded. But what does it feel like to be that person?
Right. Imagine the brief, soldier, we're not just giving you a better rifle, we're giving you better LQ.
And what does that even entail? You mentioned feeling no pain, that sounds like an advantage, but pain is a survival mechanism. It tells you you've been shot, that you need to take cover. What happens when you turn that off?
You get a soldier who can fight until they literally fall apart. A soldier who doesn't register a fatal wound until their body physically gives out. Strategically, that's... terrifyingly effective for a short-term objective.
For the objective, sure, but what about the human being? If you can edit out pain, can you edit out fear, empathy?
That's the next logical step, isn't it? Creating a soldier who is psychologically incapable of questioning an order, no matter how horrific. A soldier who doesn't suffer from PTSD because the capacity for that trauma has been, deleted.
Oh, that's a chilling thought. You're not just creating a better fighter, you're creating a more compliant weapon. And can that person ever go home? Can they sit at a dinner table with their family after their tour is over, or are they forever? Is it something else?
It completely redefines what veteran services would even mean. How do you deprogram something that's been written into their very biology?
You probably can't. And that's what gets me. From a storytelling perspective, you've just created the ultimate tragic hero or villain, someone who sacrificed their humanity for their country, whether they truly understood the cost or not.
And the pressure to do it would be immense. Let's be realistic. If U.S. intelligence found out that a rival nation was even close to developing this, do you really think the response would be a strongly worded letter to the U.N.?
No. Not a chance. The response would be a multi-billion-dollar black budget project to do it first and do it better. The classic arms race logic just applied to people.
It's the ultimate deterrent theory. The only thing that stops a bad guy with a genetically engineered soldier is a good guy with a genetically engineered soldier. But the lines between good and bad get awfully blurry when you start rewriting what it means to be human.
They vanish completely, because at that point you have to ask, are these soldiers even consenting? Can a 20-year-old kid truly give informed consent to have their fundamental human responses permanently altered? I don't see how they could.
And that's the moral event horizon right there. The moment you view a person as a platform that can be patched and updated, consent becomes apeless. Well, it becomes an inconvenience to be managed. But let's push this a step further. If a nation is willing to cross that line with its own citizens, its own soldiers, what line won't they cross when it comes to the enemy?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's the other side of this coin. And it's somehow even darker. We're not talking about enhancing your own forces anymore.
No, we're talking about tailoring the attack. You mentioned it earlier, bioweapons that target specific genetic markers. This isn't science fiction. The U.S. Air Force was reportedly looking into samples of Caucasian Russian DNA a few years back. The official line was for musculoskeletal research, but, hell, you can't help but connect the dots.
Wait, so you're saying you could design a virus that would, for example, only affect people of a certain ethnic background?
Theoretically, yes, or even more precisely. Imagine a weapon that could target a specific family line. You could, in essence, deliver a fatal hereditary disease to the entire leadership of a rival country, and it would just look like a tragic natural occurrence.
From a writer's perspective, that's the ultimate evil plot. It's a silent, invisible war. There's no explosion, no army crossing a border. Just an outbreak. A plague that only hits the people you want it to.
And think about the strategic advantage of that. The plausible deniability is almost perfect. How could you ever prove it wasn't a naturally occurring virus? You'd see a spike in a rare form of cancer or a new respiratory illness within a specific demographic, but you could never point a finger with certainty.
You couldn't retaliate. You wouldn't even know who to retaliate against. The paranoia alone would be devastating. It would turn public health crises into potential acts of war. Every new disease would be viewed through a lens of suspicion.
It makes the entire concept of mutually assured destruction obsolete. The Cold War was built on the idea that if you launch your nukes, we see them coming and we launch ours. Everyone loses. It's a terrifyingly stable equation. But this is a weapon you might not know has been used against you for months. By the time you realize it's an attack, your country is already collapsing from within.
And the infrastructure is completely untouched. You don't destroy cities, you just remove the occupants. It's the most insidious form of conquest imaginable. You conquer a nation by creating a vacuum.
It's chilling. And you know, we're all so willing to give up our genetic data, aren't we? We send our saliva to ancestry companies to find out if we're 10% Irish. We participate in medical studies. That data all ends up somewhere.
On a server. A server that can be hacked. My God, you're not just stealing credit card numbers anymore. You're stealing the biological blueprint for an entire population. That data becomes an arsenal.
An arsenal built from our own curiosity. Our desire to know where we come from. It's the ultimate irony, isn't it? The very thing that defines our heritage could be used to erase it.
That is a terrifying thought to end on. I mean, we've covered so much ground here. We started with the soldier, the individual, the tragedy of a person being remade into a weapon. And we've ended with this global invisible battlefield where your own DNA is a liability.
And for me, the thread connecting all of it is the sheer terrifying inevitability of it all. Every conversation I've had with experts, they all end in the same place. A shrug. A quiet admission that you can't stop the science. You can only hope to manage the fallout.
See, and that's where I think I land in a slightly different place. As a storyteller, I just can't let go of the human element. For me, it always comes back to that one soldier, that one family targeted by a synthetic virus. The big geopolitical chess match is fascinating, but the real story, the real horror, is in the individual cost.
I don't disagree, but my fear is that those individual costs will just be seen as acceptable losses, a rounding error in a strategic calculation. Which brings up the one question we haven't really touched on. Who is policing this? Is there a Geneva Convention for Gene Warfare?
How could there be? The whole point of these weapons is that they're deniable, they're invisible. You can't create a treaty to ban something you can't prove was ever used. It's a ghost war.
So we're just left to hope that we don't stumble into it. Hope that the ethical guardrails that scientists and doctors put up are strong enough to hold back that multi-billion dollar black budget project you mentioned?
That's a lot to put on hope. You know, we started this by talking about the line between fiction and reality vanishing. I think after this conversation, it's gone. We're standing in the future we've been writing about for decades, and frankly, I'm not sure we're ready for it.
I don't think we are, and I'm not sure we can be. All we can do is keep having these conversations, keep asking the hard questions. So thank you truly for grappling with this with me.
Thank you. It's been eye-opening, and to everyone listening, thank you for joining us on this journey into some very dark, very real territory. Stay curious. And stay safe.